You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
We're surrounded by homelessness. It's now common to see people who are homeless in many different parts of Vancouver. We read about the causes and solutions, the rising numbers, yet most of us have no idea what it's like to live on the street day after day. This morning I'm joined by someone who does know a lot about it. Judy Graves is an advocate who works with homeless people and she works for City Hall. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming in this morning. And I know this morning we had originally planned to bring some of your neighbors who live primarily in an alley adjacent to where you live in the West End. But unfortunately, Chica was feeling sick this morning.
Yep, he's promised to come in another time, but
great.
Today wasn't going to be it.
You know, and I think to me that points out one of the things that I wanted to be talking to Chico about today is how people who are homeless who don't have a roof over their head manage to deal with the sort of day-to-day things that come along, the simplicities of eating food, for instance, and basically taking care of their health. So maybe we can talk about that, because I know that you come in contact with a lot of people who are homeless.
It's really hard out there. You know, when I get up in the morning, I know where my bathroom is. I know where my fridge is. I know that I've got coffee in a little bottle. Everything I want is all in one small place. When Chica woke up this morning, he was feeling really sick. He was desperate to find a bathroom because he needed to throw up. We had to walk out of the alley across the street through a McDonald's and before we were able to get him to a washroom. He didn't have money for coffee. He didn't have a way of getting some water to drink, even though just looking at him, I could see he was dehydrated. Everything takes longer. So for you and I, we get up in the morning, we go to the bathroom, we have a shower, make our coffee, make breakfast, get dressed, we're out the door in an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm grumpy if the coffee thing doesn't happen.
Absolutely. And if you're living outside, that same hour of tasks can take you all day. Your toilet may not be in the same place as your shower. They may be miles apart. Your coffee, you may have to panhandle before you're able to come up with $1.50. To find breakfast may take you until lunch or supper time. And people are always out of sorts because their blood sugar is swinging all over the place. They wake up hungry. Kindness of our Christian hearts, we're forever giving them donuts. So their blood sugar swings up and then drops and crashes. People are not cranky because of drugs. They are cranky because of malnutrition and blood sugar swings.
I can't actually imagine being able to, being able to deal with the level of challenges that happen every day for those people. Every day when I'm going to work, I cross through an area where there are a lot of homeless people, you know, sort of getting up from where they've slept and so on and so forth. And I know that I'm seeing only really a slice of their day and not being able to follow along their day and see how those challenges unfold during the day. What about where people sleep? Like for people who are actually sleeping outside, what are the range of places that people have to lay their head down every night?
I go out overnight so that I can talk with people who are living outside. It gives them some degree of privacy and gives us a time of quiet together. I find people sleeping in alcoves all over the place. When I go out, the way I find them is to think, now if I had to sleep outside tonight, where would I be safe? Where could I find a little place? And so I find people in doorways of businesses along major streets. I find them in alcoves, in alleys tucked in behind dumpsters. I find them in underground parking, sometimes up fire escapes. people are very creative in the places that they'll find to sleep.
What kinds of skills do people develop to put up? I'm a backpacker, so I, go backpacking, but I go with my little lightweight gear that, I've got a checklist, and when I sort of head out to sleep outdoor in my tent, I've got, it's part of a little challenge or a game that I do, and I'm just in awe of people who can, night after night, find ways to keep themselves safe and maybe they aren't safe on the street. What kinds of skills do people develop to do that?
People tell me that one of the hardest things about living outside is living, they say, like a turtle. They have to carry everything they own all the time. If they put it down, they risk not being able to find it again, that it will have been taken, thrown away, discarded, stolen. So they live with their backpack on them. They walk everywhere with a heavy backpack on them. The backpack usually contains sleeping bags, and this time of year, sleeping bag is going to be soaking wet. Really hard to keep it dry. And some people carry their possessions in a shopping cart. But that means they can never go inside because the shopping cart itself can be stolen or thrown in garbage, taken away from them. And at that point, they have to start all over again, collecting a new sleeping bag, a new blanket, a new change of clothes, new toiletries. And this on top of a day that is heavy with trying to find the elements of survival, food and water.
Now, I know there are services out there that people go to, and maybe we magically think that people can, sort of have some routine where they, they get up from shelter and then they go to eat and then they go in for the services that are offered in terms of, showers and so forth. Is that really how most people go through their day?
Many people do manage to structure their day quite brilliantly. They go from service to service, perhaps spend part of their day in the library, reading or researching, do what they can to maintain a normal existence. And often with people who are highly structured, you could pass them by on the street year in, year out, and not know that they were living outside. For others, the structure becomes broken down by various trauma, being woken, beaten during the night, robbed, losing their sleeping bag, their blanket, and gradually everything they need to survive is eroded. They fall into a very severe depression. So, when we're talking about mental illness in the street, the primary mental illnesses that we see are severe depression and anxiety disorders and post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well, let's talk about people's safety, because I can see, that it would be very wearing to, I think you have to be a strong person not to start really having symptoms of mental illness if you're, if you're constantly having to fight for very simple or struggle to have the simple things that you need every day, like food, just to keep, your head on straight. What about safety for people, just the general safety of being out there? What kinds of issues do people face, particularly women, I think?
For both men and women, there is absolutely no safety in the street. Rape is not infrequent for both men and women. Assault, violent assault with weapons is not unusual. We've had cases where people have been set on fire sleeping in the street. There is absolutely no safety. And that's why almost all of us, vastly prefer to live inside.
Mm-hmm, of course. Let's talk about living inside. Do people who are outside generally want to move into homes, or How does that play out generally for
people? Well, there's a terrible mythology that people choose to live in the street. The reality around that is that I've never met someone who said they chose to live outside who could actually afford a month's rent for an apartment. The choice happens when there is no other choice. As soon as people are presented with a real choice, they move in. They move in very quickly. Right now, the provincial SROs are being renovated, and gradually people are being moved in. Everywhere I go now, people that I've waitlisted for those hotels are begging me, when is it going to be ready? When can I get in? And these are people who've lived out 10 and 12 years, who everybody said didn't want to live inside. Yes, they want to live inside.
In terms of a short-term answer, we think of shelters, and I know that last year there was extra effort on the part of the city to open up shelters and to reduce some of the barriers to people coming to shelters. How for a homeless person, what's that process like of going to stay in a shelter?
None of us want to go and stay in a shelter. When a shelter becomes the only choice other than the street, then people are put in a hard position. Many of the shelters, a person can't bring their shopping cart. They can't bring their possessions. They can't bring their dog or cat. They can't come in and stay with their spouse. They can't stay with their friends. So when the city and province last winter opened the heat shelters, we insisted that they be dog-friendly, pet-friendly, that we made sure that people could come in groups with their friends, with their spouse, with their partner, that they could bring their shopping cart, their bicycle, their bedding, anything that they treasured. And immediately, when the shelters were open, people came in and they were full. And there were nights last winter when we had 500 people come in to stay in those shelters overnight. People do want shelter. It's simply not available.
Now, we were talking before we came in the studio and about the heat shelters. I understand that also had an effect on people's general mood in terms of the kind of steadiness of how they felt during the day.
Well, absolutely. We go back to blood sugar and the need for human beings to eat at regular intervals. With the heat shelters, the people were inside for 16 hours a day, and they were given two really substantial Canada Food Guide meals every day while they were in, and snacks as well if they wanted them. And what we saw was as soon as people's blood sugar was stabilized, the incidence of aggressive panhandling dropped to almost zero. So people think that the aggression is about drugs. It's not. It's about food. When you're living outside, you can't access regular food.
Now, there's been some moves on the part of the provincial government. Minister Coleman has put forth a draft bill that's on assistance, the Assistance to Shelter Act, which talks about having police help homeless people off the street, and I guess I'm using the term that's framed in the act, assistance. What's your perspective on what that's going to be like for homeless people when people come and when police come and try and forcefully move them somewhere? What kind of questions does that raise for you?
I'm extremely concerned about this. I know that there are some people who refuse to come into shelter, usually because they have a mental illness that makes it absolutely impossible for them to stay in a crowded space. I also know that when I find somebody in the middle of the night who desperately wants to come into shelter, that there are no shelter beds. There is no shelter space available to them. There is nowhere to take them. So I question where police will take them and whether they will take them then into jail, in which case last winter we had 37 nights of extreme cold weather and people would have been jailed for 37 nights having committed no crime at all. I have other concerns. We're talking a great deal in the media about Tracy, who died last winter after being approached by outreach workers and police and burned to death in her shopping cart. But people are not talking about Daryl McCaskill and his girlfriend. The winter before last, Daryl was turned away from many shelters because they were full to overflowing, and he and his girlfriend sought shelter in a little alcove in the Mount Pleasant area. Their tarpaulins caught fire. Daryl died. His girlfriend is forever physically and emotionally scarred from the fire. There simply isn't the space to be forcing people into. And by introducing a bill that pretends to be kind, it's taking the attention away from the lack of shelter and the lack of housing available to the people who are living outside.
I think sometimes when the issue of homelessness is presented in the mainstream media, there's a kind of sense that, oh, we are providing all these things. We are providing shelters for people. You know, we're trying to help them off the street and so forth in a way, you know, maybe to make us feel like, you know, we're doing enough, that we're concerned. Where are we falling short?
Well, we are falling short. And as I say that, I want to speak to the municipal government of Vancouver and to the provincial government of British Columbia and say that, in fact, in Vancouver, we are doing a better job than almost anywhere in North America. We have, compared to other large cities, relatively few homeless, which begs the question, if we have relatively few, why don't we just solve it? It's not rocket science. What we have is a problem where we have less housing than we have people. And the only solution is going to be through more housing. We have been tearing down rooming houses, older apartment buildings, residential hotels for decades now. And the result is that there is nowhere for the poor to live anymore. The numbers of homeless are increasing, but they are still relatively low. And this is a resolvable problem.
If you were able to kind of communicate one thing to people who aren't homeless and who, you know, really haven't sort of allowed that interface with homeless people to develop, so a kind of relationship that we might have with other neighbors that we have, for instance, compared to our homeless neighbors. What would you say to people in terms of what, you know, how we need to start bridging that gap in order to care enough about homeless people to make sure that we solve this problem?
Well, the first thing that we do is to recognize that these are our neighbors. These are our children. These are our brothers and sisters, quite literally. These are the people that we went to school with. These are the people we played sports with. These are our neighbors. They're every day in our neighborhood. And in neighborhoods where people are intentional about befriending the people in the streets, we're starting to see some real progress made. I think Kitsilano has done wonderful work in befriending and embracing the population of people who are living outside in Kits. Commercial Drive. We have a number of very, very responsible members of the community who are out there daily getting to know people, enjoying them, looking after them. Collingwood, Joyce Collingwood as well. And I would really love to see that attitude spread throughout Vancouver and the Lower Mainland.
Well, Judy, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you very much for sharing with us like some of the insights and real experience that you have around homelessness, and really appreciate all the good work that you do.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Judy Graves. She's an activist with homeless people. She works for City Hall.